negative thing. And so we just want to make sure that we understand it and then, of course, deal with it appropriately. What we saw last week was that anger is often quite appropriate. It is something that God practices with great frequency, as a matter of fact. We're not about to charge him with any kind of sin. We are made in his image, as I mentioned this week and last week, and that is the source from which we derive all of our emotions. We experience these things because God does, and we share his image. We also saw, though, back in the book of Proverbs, simple truth that anger, though, is also a learned response. And to the extent that you spend time with those that are prone to anger, those who have little disciplinary, you know, control over those emotions, then you will pick up that behavior. We have, of course, an awful lot of people, I think, in any culture who are given over to anger, quite likely and preeminently, because that's the way mom or dad responded to things. You grow up year after year after year in a home where you have upset and angry, you know, people and you know, misbehaving and acting out, as we sometimes say. Especially children learn that behavior. I suppose all of us at some point or another have seen a small child do something, and as soon as we see it, we realize that they are mimicking this behavior. So we want to be careful of the people that we spend our time with, people we associate with, and certainly, above all, the people that we influence, recognizing that our behaviors are in fact picked up by others. We also saw that, you know, the obvious, as there are so many warnings about it, that anger can be a terribly dangerous thing. It ultimately can lead even to murder, and the connection is made in Scripture in that regard as well. But, as we saw last week with some couple of examples, it can also be tremendously profitable. It is a powerful force. It is a motivating force. It is something that causes us to want to do something. You know, it's very hard to just be angry and stew. What happens is we want to act out. We want to say something. We want to do something. We want to manifest anger. Properly handled, then, it could be a tremendously useful thing, motivating us to be much more effective in the service of our God as well. So this evening, everybody please, just open up to the book of Nehemiah. What we're going to do is go back and look at a man, a whole book that he has written, and it is about him. An Old Testament book, it comes from the 400s B.C., about a man who was tremendously successful in the service of his God. He is a wise man. He is a man who had enormous power and influence in the captivity, but had so impressed the king that he was serving that he was given enormous resources and responsibility and power to go and take on the building, the rebuilding of the walls in Jerusalem. He was relieved from his service of the Persian king. He was allowed to go back an enormous amount of money and tax-free as well even, and set about trying to fortify again this city of Jerusalem. Now what we're going to do tonight is in four circumstances, look at the events that took place in Nehemiah's life as he was attempting to do God's will, as he was simply setting about to obey God's instructions in seeing that the city be fortified. He had a role, an important role to play in God's plans. He rose to the occasion and, of course, was immensely successful. And as we'll see, the temptation to anger is certainly present. And in at least one case, we are told by the Scripture that Nehemiah himself is angered by events that he sees. So, it was, I would guess, about 6 or 8 weeks ago that we were looking at Nehemiah himself. In the Wednesday night class, we don't get to delve very deeply into it. So hopefully, get a little more insight tonight into this fascinating character by starting with the first event in chapter 2 of his book. So I think everybody's there now. That's how you turn to the pages. In Nehemiah chapter 2, in the first three verses, it came about in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it to the king. So he is what is called a cupbearer to this King Artaxerxes. Now, I had not been sad in his presence. So the king said to me, "Why is your face sad, though you are not sick? there's nothing but this is nothing but sadness of heart. Then I was very much afraid, and I said to the king, let the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies desolate and its gates have been consumed by fire? Now, if you'll skip to the end of that chapter, verse 18, I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me, and also about the king's words which he had spoken to me. And then they said, let us arise and build. So they put their hands to the good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab heard it, they mocked us and despised us and said, what is this thing you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king? Now, brother, you've read before, you're familiar with the story, all these verses in between the first three and 18 and 19, and you know that this cupbearer to the king, this man who is so trusted as a slave, that he tastes the king's food to see if it is poisoned before the king himself will eat it. Well, that man is the one in the best position to poison the king. He is the one man that could most likely get the job done. So that this man is trusted, this Nehemiah, by Artaxerxes, but he is also still a Jew. He is a man of profound faith. He is a man who, while he is in captivity and likely was born there, is nonetheless a man who cares about these city walls. He then is permitted by the king to go and inspect those walls. He sees that they're torn down, and he is saddened by it. What we find out as we look at this is that Nehemiah is just a regular guy like anybody else with the full range of emotion, but apparently pretty intense. It's hard for me to imagine having the same sort of commitment to a place I hadn't been, I haven't really got any roots in, but he understands God's will. And so he's a passionate man, and he's so sad that quite literally at the risk of his life, it says he was afraid in those first three verses, when you come into the presence of that king or any king, there are certain norms of behavior, and if you don't meet those protocols, if you should anger that king, then you can die on the spot. So he fears that he's, stepped over that line, but he also pours out his heart. I'm saddened because the walls of my city, where the very tombs of my fathers are, is lying in destruction. So the king says, okay, go and build. And the people, when he gets there, say, let's go ahead and build. And they have to be then very excited. They have to be very happy. There has to be a lot of hope. You can just imagine their spirits are soaring. We're going to go build. And what do they immediately hit? The opposition of this Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem, all these, the local guys, that are also not Jews, are opposed to this. And brethren, I at least know that at this point, I would already be finding this a little bit irritating. Okay? So in 18 and 19 of chapter 2, when these guys start mocking us, it says in verse 19, despising us, and then falsely charging at the end of verse 19, what is this thing you're doing? Are you rebelling against the king? How did Nehemiah even get there? The king gave him permission. How can he build at all? The king gave him the money. What does the king also say? He counts the work as being such a good thing, I'm going to relieve you, of all the taxes. Go and take care of this, my most trusted cupbearer. Go ahead and do these things. So when you accuse me of rebellion and you mock me and you despise me, Britain, I'm here to tell you, my years anyway, when people mock and despise me, it makes me mad. How do you feel about it? Somebody makes me the butt of the joke. That's not fun. And when it's unfair as this is, it would anger me. What is Nehemiah's response? Nehemiah's response is in that last verse of chapter 2. So at this first, circumstance, we have this. I answered them and said to them, the God of heaven will give us success. Therefore we, his servants, will arise and build. but you have no portion, right, or memorial in Jerusalem. Now, brother, that is an expression of faith. It also sounds to me like a guy who just plants both feet, straightens up, maybe even leans in a little bit, and says, oh yeah? Well, just watch. So you may mock me, you may despise me, and you may falsely charge me with a capital offense that would get me killed by that king. But I am here. I am here to stay, and we're going to take care of this building. Furthermore, it is none of your business. You have no right, you have no memorial in Jerusalem. That's just a man who has confidence that God will see that he succeeds. But at this point, we don't have any statement about anger. We just see it. You begin to scratch your head a little bit. How would you feel? How would you respond? Now, the next thing that happens in those first three verses of chapter 3. Eliashib, the high priest, arose with his brothers, the priests, and built the sheep gate. They consecrated it, hung its doors. They consecrated the wall to the Tower of the Hundred and the Tower of Hananel. Now, we don't know about these places today, but they would be very significant structures and would take an awful lot of work to be building. So in verse 2, next to him, the men of Jericho built. Next to them, Zakur, the son of Imri, built. Now, the sons of Hasanah built the fish gate. They laid its beams, they hung its doors, its bolts, and its bars, and it goes on like that. So turn the page, come to chapter 4, and its first three verses came about when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall. He became furious and very angry and mocked the Jews. So now we got a fourth guy that's mocking these Jews. He spoke in the presence of his brothers and the wealthy men of Samaria, and he said, what are these feeble Jews doing? Are they going to restore it for themselves? Can they offer sacrifices? Can they finish in a day? Can they revive the stones from the dusty rubble, even the burned ones? Now Tobiah the Ammonite was near him, and he said, even what they are building, if a fox should jump on it, he'd break their stone wall down. So what are you continuing to get? More of this mockery and all of this put down. Now, brethren, again, I don't know about you. I spent 4 years working for a deacon up in the Kirkland congregation in Seattle area. And on those job sites, I found that you could have a lot of occasions where it's just hard work and frustrating. And I've got those flattened thumbs, from missing those nails. I tripped over, on my pair of steering 4x4s. And, had all those kinds of problems and everything. But at this point, they've been building for quite a long time. And when you're involved in a project like that, and by the way, I haven't done much stone work, but I suspect it is a lot more difficult than using power tools and 2x4s that have been cut and smooth so that everything was nice to the touch. What they're working with is rough work. And the more tired I would get, the more prone I also was to frustration and anger. So here we go with some more. They've been working for quite a while. Excuse me. And what we want to do now is see his next response at the elevated amount of grief that they're catching from these opposers. And that response will be found in verses 4 and following, just reading on in this fourth chapter. He prays, hear, O our God, how we are despised. Return their reproach on their own heads and give them up for plunder in a land of captivity, which he knows something about. Do not forgive their iniquity, and let not their sin be blotted out before thee, for they have demoralized the builders. They are having success. They are demoralizing the builders. They are hindering this work. And that's quite a prayer, isn't it? Now, brother, I suggest that at this point, certainly the blood pressure in Nehemiah is rising. You can tell from the prayer that it is. But he's not lashing out at anybody. What is he doing with his distress and his upset? Level 1,
he takes it to his God. He doesn't go and get some kind of verbal fisticuffs with Sanballat. He goes to his God and he makes a request. But I'll tell you what, it's a pretty firm request. I want them to be punished for their sin, and I'd like for it to be pretty dramatic. Then, Lord, please take care about this. But they're demoralizing the builder. The builders don't forgive their iniquity, and let not their sin be blotted up. May they be taken captive into a foreign land. Did Nehemiah lose his temper? He did not. Nehemiah was moved by his anger. I think we have some reason at least to suggest that he's reached that level of description. You know, moved by his anger to go to his God with the problem. And he expresses what his will is. He's not rebuked for it. I think his prayer is an appropriate one. I believe it's recorded for us because it was right for him to pray as he did. But you can feel the emotion in that prayer now, can't you? I don't want to do it myself, God, but I'm asking you to punish these people. And then in verse 6, what happened? Then says, so we built a wall, and the whole wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had what? Had a mind to work. Now, friends, this is one of the points I was trying to make last week. As I'm looking at these circumstances, and we were taught to meditate and dwell on these things, you try to put yourself in their shoes, and you think about, you know, these circumstances here, because that's what God intends for us to do with Scripture, to mull it over so that we can come as close as possible to getting involved in those circumstances and learning those lessons. What at least suggests to you as a possibility, what I think I see there, is that Nehemiah's back's getting up. Nehemiah's about done with these guys. He's got a work to do. He has the permission of the king, the money of the king. He has every right to do this. And these men, who aren't even Jews, are hindering the work, demoralizing the workers. They have a direct impact on his success. And I think it's getting the hackles up. He's not happy about this. He is not happy enough about it. And he goes all the way to the extreme action of praying about it. Now, for most of us, we don't ever even get to that prayer, do we? For most of us, and myself again being the example, we just like to skip over that thing, don't we? And immediately, well, I'll give you a piece of my mind, you know, that kind of approach, and we get ourselves in trouble. When Nehemiah's been working hard for a long time and he sees that that project is being hindered, and it's been several times that these guys have attacked him and mocked him and lied about him, he takes it to God, as should we. So then, they get busier than ever. Looks to me like what we suggested last week, that anger can be a motivating kind of a thing, is exactly what's taking place right here. So, he took it to the throne of God, he expressed his will in the matter, and then what? Get to work. Take some of that energy then, and apply it to the project itself. Number 3. So, as the story continues to develop, chapter after chapter, we come now to verses 7 and 8 in chapter 4. Now, came about with Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites, that list of opposition is getting quite long now, heard that the repair of the walls of Jerusalem went on and that the breaches began to be closed, they were what? Very angry. Now, brethren, that's the second time we found out the attitude of the people that are opposing Nehemiah. Now, again, put yourself in their shoes. You think for just a minute, what usually happens in your mind when somebody gets mad at you? Do you immediately just, oh, I'm so sorry, what can I do? Forgive me. Is that how you are? That's not me. No, I'm sorry, just, you know, tell you the truth. Somebody starts getting mad at me, what happens? I start getting mad right back, don't I? You get mad at me, I get mad at you. There's just something about the infectious nature of anger isn't there. Now, Proverbs taught us that you should not make friends and spend time with angry people because you'll learn it from them. And brethren, I'll tell you, you'll catch the bug instantly when somebody gets mad at you. Today, we call it road rage. At least, that's one of the forms. Now, if you read the news today and yesterday, did you see the story? Grandma took a three-year-old child to the store, and some guy apparently behind her thought she lingered too long at the stop sign, so he pulled the trigger and killed the three-year-old. Anger is a profoundly dangerous thing, okay? And it just keeps, you know, amping up. So, you think somebody, now I don't know the circumstances, they didn't tell what happened, I have no idea what Grandma did. Okay, brethren, but typically, these road rage things, they just feed on each other, don't they? And it's because both parties are mad that one's trying to, I'll show you, you know, and so the battle begins and leads ultimately, in this case, you know, to a terrible disaster. So in verses 7 and 8, these guys are furious. And it's the second time we're told that. And when people are treating me like that, I tell you, I feel it, I learn it, and I return it. I'm not happy with you when you're not happy with me. So then, in verse 8, and all of them conspired together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to cause a disturbance in it. Now, brethren, this is, you know, the declaration of war. And yet, no, you're not friends with people that now are very conscientiously fighting against you. You get mad in return, and you go to war. Now, the response in this third case is verse 9. But we prayed to our God, and because of them, we set up a guard against them day and night. Well, how about that? And in chapter 4, verse 14, when I saw their fear, so the people had, you know, their fear, because now it's actual war. You can see in 13, we're talking about stationing people with weapons now. You know, it's come to battle. We're going to lose lives if we're not careful here. But in 14, rather, when I saw their fear, I rose and spoke to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people. Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and fight, but fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. What does he appeal to? He appeals to two things, brethren. One is fighting, and the other, though, is love. He wants them to take these two emotions, which we would usually think of as being opposites, and that's okay to do that. Remembering the love, the intensity, the degree, the passion of the love that you have for your family. And then meet these guys with what? Weapons in your hands. Now, brethren, I guess, to the degree that you love, when you see injustice done to those you love, then you will be at least equally what? Mad. I hope I haven't told this story before. It doesn't take long to tell it, but when people ask me, what's the maddest you've ever been? That ought to be an assignment like each of you to write down. What are the three maddest you've ever been? That would be a great reading. Okay. But you know, people ask me such a thing, or I think about it, I will just never forget how close I came to just murder one day. Because Don and I were in an airport. We had infant children. One of them, no more, Jesse, I guess, 2 or 3 years old is all he was. And we were sitting there in the chairs waiting, as you endlessly do, you know, in an airport. And so my son was standing right in front of us when, from off on our right, a man who was apparently late for a flight with a briefcase came roaring, racing, running down the aisle there in the airport. And with his briefcase, clobbered my son in the head. I mean, thump! And it just, what happened? Brethren, I saw red. Don, to take care of the child, what did I do? In an instant, without any thought, because I love that child, what did I do? I took off to the airport. faster than that man. Finally, fortunately, I caught myself because I was about to level him like one of the Seahawks tackles. I mean, really, if it had gone another few steps, I think I would have launched myself in midair with full intent to kill, and I would have taken him down. He had hit my son! Now, brethren, why was I so mad? Because of the love I have for my son. It's motivational. It is powerful. It is high horsepower. Okay? So what's happening in these circumstances? Nehemiah knows how to harness that power. Nehemiah knows how to work with that power. And so yet again, immediately confronted with now open war, they're trying to kill us. He is in prayer. He invokes love. And he tells his people to go to work on that wall with weapons in hand. So this intensity is getting an awful lot of good done. Now we come after all of that, and I just love setting the stage like this. So far we've had three circumstances. Everyone involved what? Enemies. Everyone involved people mocking us, laughing at us, and then trying to harm us up to and including, you know, the need for weapons. So all of it has been those guys that have no right or memorial in Israel, and they're attacking us. Watch this one, now in chapter 4 and verse 15. It happened when our enemies heard that it was known to us that God had frustrated their plan, then all of us returned to the wall, each one to his work. 22 and 23 in that fourth chapter now, last two verses in the chapter. At that time I also said to the people, let each man with his servant spend the night within Jerusalem so that they may be a guard for us by night and a laborer by day. So neither I, my brothers, my servants, nor the men of the guard who followed me, none of us removed our clothes. Each took his weapon, even to the water. Now, you know the end of this story. It takes them 56 days to build this wall. They're going to spend 56 days in these events that we've been reviewing right here, rebuilding these walls. Very hard work, round-the-clock work, rising opposition, insults and lies being told about you, and finally we're on the wall with weapons. Now, how do you feel? Now, if you're like me, the more tired I am and the more frustrated I am, the harder I work, the longer my patience, right? The more balanced and reasonable and, you know, controlled that I am. Right? What happens when you get like that? You get more and more tense. You get more and more fragile. Your fuse gets shorter and shorter and shorter. Okay? Now look at the first six verses in chapter 5. Now, see, chapter breaks, ignore him. He goes straight through it. And he just told us about this. That he, you know, I can't even change my clothes. And now, there was a great outcry of the people and of their wives against their Jewish brothers. This is in the house now. For there are those who said, we, our sons and our daughters are many, therefore let us get grain that we may eat and live. And there were others who said, we are mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, our houses, that we might get grain because of the famine. We have only just now finding out about the famine going on in the midst of all of this. Also there were those who said, we have borrowed money for the king's tax on our fields and our vineyards, and now our flesh is like the flesh of our brothers. Our children is like their children. Yet behold, we are forcing our sons and our daughters to be slaves. And some of our daughters are forced into bondage already, and we're helpless because our fields and vineyards belong to others. And then Nehemiah, very cool and calm, you know, without any trace of emotion in verse 6, did what? Says, I was what? Is it just angry? That's it. You just see the top blowing. All of this! You know, from these guys who are not Jews, we're out here 24-7 wearing clothes, you know, and weapons and building, and how exhausted are we by this time? And you guys are mistreating each other, the people I'm building the wall to protect? I was very angry. when I heard their outcry and these words. Now, at this point, this is as, you know, as exercised, I guess, as a guy can get. I know that at this point, what are you thinking? Well, I've got a weapon in my hand, and everywhere I look, I've got a prop. At this point, I feel like you just pretty well indiscriminately start lashing out at the Jews and the Arabs and whoever else. You know, it's within arm's length, is what you think.
Is what we often would do. What actually happens? This is great in chapter 5, brethren. This is just masterful self-control. So, with very angry being the self-description that Nehemiah offers, he says, I consulted with myself. So what did he do? He said, you know, you need a talking to. And you need to figure this thing out. So let's have us a consultation here, you know, and we're going to have a nice little discussion and sort this thing out. That's verse 7. First in verse 7. Then it says, and contended with the nobles and the rulers and said to them, you are exacting usury each from his brother. Please note that precisely like Matthew 18, which counsels Christians, whoever have a beef, you know, with a brother or a sister, to go to that person and that person alone. The Lord's plan was, whenever you have a problem, you don't take it to anybody but the person you have the problem with. And he does that after his private consultation. So he got real sound advice, you know, professional counselor himself, and then he went and he had a private confrontation with these Jews who were, in fact, misbehaving. And then again, brethren, at the very end of verse 7, there's three things in that one verse. Then it says, therefore, I held a what? A great assembly against them. Now, Nehemiah is a man of action. This is a guy who can get things done. And he's going to get those things done any and every way that they need to be, you know, handled. So, we see Nehemiah praying twice. We see Nehemiah controlling himself to think about it in a private consultation with himself. We see Nehemiah doing what Jesus would tell us so many years later. Go to the individuals that you have the problem with first. But apparently that may have failed because then, just like Matthew 18, 15 through 17 says, now we're going to have the public confrontation. And the end of the matter in verses 8 through 13. I said to them, we, according to our ability, have redeemed our Jewish brothers who were sold to the nations. Now would you even sell your brothers that they may be sold to us? Then they were silent and could not find a word to say. Again I said, the thing which you are doing is not good. Should you not walk in the fear of our God because of the reproach of the nations, our enemies? And likewise I, my brothers, and my servants are lending them money and grain. Please, let us leave off this usury. Now usury, of course, is just charging interest. In the Jewish law, were you ever allowed to charge interest to a brother or a sister, fellow Jew? It was forbidden, verboten, for those of you heading for Germany. Or just back. Okay? So, leave it off! It's a sin! It's forbidden! 11, please, give back to them this very day their fields, their vineyards, their olive groves, and their houses, also the hundredth part of the money and of the grain, the new wine, the oil that you're exacting from them. And then they said, we will. Give it back, and we'll require nothing from them. We'll do exactly as you say. So I called the priests and took an oath from them that they would do according to this promise. I also shook out the front of my garment and I said, thus may God shake out every one from his house and from his possessions who does not fulfill this promise. Even thus may he be shaken out and emptied. And all the assembly said, amen. And they praised the Lord. Then the people did according to this promise. Now, brethren, again, some speculation here, you know, I freely grant. But when a man is described as very angry, he does not stand up, you know, and calmly, limp-wristed, you know, express himself. A very angry man got up in a public assembly
and demanded that sin stop now and that all the profit they had from it be returned. Did you see the list? I want you to give back the vineyards. I want you to give back the houses. I want you to give back the money. I want you to give back everything. And they said, okay. Now you see the expression on my face? I think that's exactly what they did. They were looking at the towering rage of a man who was in perfect control of his anger. And in the face of that, they said, well, okay. It's time to back down to do exactly what you said. Because, brethren, I'm just guessing, looking at that public assembly, was there one soul in that room that wanted to see what would happen next if they said no to that very angry Nehemiah? What had he been praying for earlier? Sending all these people into captivity. Okay? So, brethren, what do you have in Nehemiah? You have this astonishingly capable man. He has risen to the position of highest importance in a foreign nation as cupbearer to the king. He's given carte blanche, whatever he needs, to go back and build a city with walls that's a potential enemy to fight against the king that's letting him do it. And when he goes back there, he finds that there's opposition, he finds there are annoying circumstances, he finds his own brethren aren't living up to their expectation, and in every case, as he faces all this aggravation, what does he do? He prays, he thinks, he goes privately to the individuals, and he goes publicly in the assemblies until what gets done? God's will and God's work. And in 56 days, what do they now have? They have the walls built around Jerusalem. That is just unbelievable how much they got done in that length of time. So then, lesson number two, brethren, what have we learned? Make no excuse, because there is none. When you are aggravated, when you are irritated, when you are annoyed, there is never an excuse that you sin, that you create problems for other people, that you lash out in any way. With enormous self-control, you pray, you consult yourself, you think it out, and then you step out there privately to deal with the specific problem that you've got. Go public if you must, and get the job done, because you are very angry. Very anger, if such a term could exist, brethren, get a lot of good work done, properly managed like Nehemiah does.